For this morning, the instructions, we will continue to open up the field of mindfulness, awareness. We started with some anchor, the breath or posture, some primary object to unify, collect the mind, collect the attention, and as a place that one can return to whenever we're lost or scattered or just resting in the present moment. Yesterday, Kirsten opened up the field to include awareness of the body and how she beautifully presented the body as being nature, connecting with nature as life moves through us, whether it's sensations in the body or sounds, images, if they appear in your field of vision, whatever is calling your attention can be the next subject of mindfulness. And today, we want to continue to open up that field. Last night, Yoha gave his talk on the hindrances and emotions as they arise. And we want to include that directly as part of the meditation field. You probably have had a number of emotions coming up before this, so it's not like, oh, now you can be aware of emotions. You probably were aware of them from the beginning, but now we can formally include them in our field of meditation as meditation objects. And this afternoon, Yoha will guide us in further skillful ways to work with emotions. This morning, I just wanted to say a few words about them as we go into the instructions. Mm-hmm. Emotions are part of our human experience, and they're easy to get caught in, as you probably have seen. And one of the keys in working with emotions or any of the hindrances as they arise is to not take ownership of them, not take them personally, not identify with the emotion. My anger, my sadness, my sorrow, whether or not you use the word my, when we get caught in the story around it, that is what is happening. Rather than simply seeing these feelings or emotions, or as the Buddha spoke of them, mind states, as just arising in the field of human experience. And I thought I'd read a bit of from the Satipatthana Sutta about what the Buddha said as far as how to relate to these feelings when they arise, these mind states. And how does a practitioner abide contemplating mind as mind? That's how it's translated. Here a practitioner understands that the mind affected by lust as mind affected by lust, and the mind unaffected by lust as mind unaffected by lust. One understands mind affected by hate as mind affected by hate, mind unaffected by hate as mind unaffected by hate. One understands mind affected by delusion as mind affected by delusion, and unaffected by delusion as mind unaffected by delusion. And the same goes for understands the contracted mind, the distracted mind, which is another way of saying a restless mind, understands the exalted mind and the unexalted mind, understands surpassed mind and the unsurpassed mind, understands the concentrated mind as concentrated and unconcentrated as unconcentrated, understands the liberated mind and the unliberated mind. Now, when he's saying he understands, you notice that he's not saying one tries to get rid of, one has a reaction, one tries to fix or change. He's simply saying one sees this has arisen in the mind. No judgment there at all. No identifying with this mind state at all. It simply arises, is here for a while, and passes away. The problem comes when a mind state or an emotion arises, and as so usually happens, whether or not we're on a meditation retreat, is that we then begin to create stories and reactions around that emotion as it arises. When you have an emotion, it expresses itself in one of three ways. There's the story. Why did he say that or do that? Whatever story you have going. There's the feeling in the mind, tight, heavy, exalted, spacious, bright, peaceful, frustrated, whatever. And there's the feeling in the body that expresses itself somewhere in the chest tightening or the throat constricting or the heart opening or the belly clenching or a sense of at ease or radiating out and relaxed. That's just how emotions are expressed. Where do you think we usually hang out in those three when an emotion arises and grabs us? Up here on the story level, which is the other aspect of what Yuha was talking about last night. Remember when he talked about papancha? Papancha, it's a very good word to know, a very important word to know. How the mind from one thought proliferates and creates a whole story and a whole reality. Thoughts mushroom into other thoughts and other thoughts, and there we are spinning around in a particular story, whether it's for a few minutes or a few hours or days, over and over, just replaying that story. So the key is to move from the story level of the papancha to coming into a direct experience of how this emotion expresses itself in the body or in the mental atmosphere. Mindfulness has a very unique property. Of all the 52 mental factors there are, mindfulness is the one factor amongst the unwholesome mind states of suffering or the wholesome, beautiful states or those neither wholesome or unwholesome. Mindfulness weakens the unwholesome or akusala, it's called in the teachings, those negative mind states, states of suffering, and it strengthens the wholesome states. That's the amazing property of it. So when you are mindful of a difficult mind state, to simply notice it, let it be part of your meditation without struggling, but simply seeing, oh, this is the mind that's contracted, or the mind is now filled with anger, or the mind is filled with calm and love. The awareness that is noticing the emotion is not tainted by it. The awareness of fear is not afraid. The awareness of anger is not angry. So when we're mindful, we're moving from being in the middle of that state and getting and identifying and getting caught in it to bringing that loving awareness to whatever is arising in the mind. An interesting fact to me that they've discovered in modern neuroscience that an emotion lasts on the average for about 90 seconds if Papancha doesn't take over. And they have ways of measuring the cortisol in the blood. There's these studies that you can read about online where an emotion arises and it affects the system, different kinds of responses in the nervous system and in the blood and in the hormonal system. That's there, and 90 seconds it flushes out. If you don't get caught in the story. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that comforting? That's an invitation for us to simply see the mind has created this story, or sometimes the body has a particular feeling. You wake up on the wrong side of the bed and you're kind of in a funky mood, and that can give rise to stories as well. So it works both ways. The mind, the thoughts affect the emotions and the body can affect the emotions and the thoughts. So, this is what we're doing, to see whatever mind state that arises simply as a mind state. And when we can do that and practice that here, we are more able to have space around a mind state so we don't act on it. And in our life, this gives us the choice of how to wisely respond to whatever the situation is, instead of reacting out of the story that our mind gets swept up by. Sometimes we can simply name the feeling or the emotion. Oh, the mind is, there's anger in the mind right now, or there's sorrow, or there's sadness. Sometimes just naming it and you're not feeding it. But often the emotion or the mind state is still there, and that's when it can be very skillful to let yourself feel it without getting lost in the story. The Mindful Self-Compassion program has these very simple axioms. Name it and you tame it. feel it, and you heal it. There's something very healing about awareness brought to an emotion in a skillful way that allows for it to be processed and metabolized so it doesn't run us. Now, this is where we also really need to respect our capacities, that we need to know what's called in trauma work our window of tolerance, where if you are finding you can't just name it, or you it's too much to feel, that this is not the optimal approach. If it's too much to process with wise attention, then the Buddha himself suggests alternatives than staying with the feeling. He has one very wonderful discourse where he gives five different methods for dealing with distracting thoughts and mind states, particularly. One of those is just turning the attention elsewhere. That is, instead of staying with the story, you might open up to sounds and just shift your attention away. Or feel somewhere in your body that is not activated by the mind state, and allow that to be the focus of your attention so you're not feeding those thoughts and story and mind state. Another is to have some space and find some relaxation of mind. So you might find that going for a walk in nature is a way to just get some space so you're not caught up in the story. You need to trust yourself and see, what do I need right now that will let me be here for my experience? And if you have the energy and the stability and the centeredness to let yourself be with the mind state and actually feel it in a loving way that's not identifying with it, there is a powerful transformation that can happen. But if not, then you need to take care of yourself in a way that allows you to maintain or stay in that grounded, balanced way by using whatever other strategy helps you get out of the spin cycle. Yesterday, we shared the self-compassion practice. That is another very, very beneficial way to just calm the system down. And then perhaps as it's calmed down after a while, you might be able to include the mind state or emotion as part of your meditation. And sometimes it's hard for people to identify what they're feeling. You don't have to struggle to say, you know, what is it that I'm feeling? I can't get it. Sometimes just asking yourself, what am I feeling right now? And then just allowing for it to present itself. But if not, no need to hassle and to just be with whatever is easy to connect with. One more thing I want to add, and then we'll have the formal meditation. The Buddha says in his teaching on wise effort, he says, we guard against the unwholesome states, know how to overcome them by being mindful of them when those unwholesome states arise. And then he also says, it's good to cultivate wholesome states like mindfulness, loving kindness, compassion, etc. And the fourth wise effort is to maintain and increase wholesome states when they arise. So that means if you're feeling peaceful, if you're feeling loving, if you're feeling joy or happiness, that too can be an object of your mindfulness. Whatever it is that's perhaps elicited those feelings, you can let that peace or that joy be the subject of your mindfulness. And this is where, as he said, one knows the surpassed state as the surpassed state, or the exalted state as the exalted state. One knows joy. Ah, this is joy. Without attachment, without identifying, look at me, I'm pretty joyful. What a joyful guy I am. Rather, oh, don't miss it. Let it nourish you. Become very familiar with it. And that's how you strengthen the wholesome states when they arise. This is the essence of that awakening joy course that I teach. It's so easy to miss the wholesome because we're on the lookout for the unwholesome. Include those beautiful, wholesome mind states when they arise as part of your meditation. Okay, so let's find our posture. And first, get in touch with our intention for sitting here. Your highest intention that will bring about a sense of appreciation for what you're doing. Perhaps take a few deeper breaths and breathe in calming energy. And as you exhale, let go, relax. And let your body invite ease within your body. Any places of tension or holding, let them soften. And then let the breath find its own natural rhythm, and let whatever your home base is, just settle in on that, whether it's the breath or your posture, whatever you've been using. And then as we started to do yesterday, we opened up the field so that when other sensations in the body call your attention, or feeling your whole body experience as you sit here, or sounds call you, or any other physical dimension, you can let go of the primary object and open to that new experience, returning to the home base when it feels helpful. And we can open up to these mind states and feelings, including the hindrances that Juha spoke of last night, the wanting mind, attachment, aversion, dullness, sleepiness, restlessness, worry or doubt, or any other emotion. When it becomes strong, just Just ask yourself, well, what am I feeling now? And holding it with very kind awareness, feel it as much as you're able to without getting into the story. Feel how it expresses itself in the body. Be interested, curious. Notice if the sensations stay the same or change, where they're felt, how they're expressing themselves. How does it feel in the mind? Is it tight? Is it heavy? Is it agitated or calm? And as best as possible, try not to get into the story. And when you see that papancha has taken over, when you do, come back and feel yourself sitting here. And incorporate the emotion as long as you can feel centered and interested and balanced. So there's no need to get rid of anything, just to see it with that loving awareness and see that, like everything else, things arise and pass on their own. And here we are, knowing experience with clarity and kindness. So first, you can take some time if there's any questions about that those instructions or about practice. Yeah, Bernard.
If identification has already taken place, if it's become a habit, how can I then get to open awareness?
If identification has taken place and it's a habit, how are you going to get to open awareness? You let the identification be the subject of your mindfulness. Oh, identifying. Seeing the identification, the awareness that sees is not identifying. And actually, it brings up one other thing that I wanted to mention, that this is where the second arrow comes in. So we might have, say, a pain in our body somewhere. And then we don't realize it, but we are looking through a filter of aversion, of anger or frustration. Okay, here's pain, unpleasant. And then there's, oh, I hate this pain, or when is it going to go away? And okay, I'll be mindful of it. Okay, pain, you know, burning, throbbing, oh, I hate it. And we're not realizing that that mind state is really what's predominant. And so if you find yourself struggling anywhere with whatever the experience is, you might step back a moment and see, oh, what is my relationship to what's happening here? And chances are there's a mind state that we're identified with. And so simply to notice, oh, look at that. And being very kind with it and seeing in that way, you have a different relationship. Like that Pema Chodron line that I used, take delight in the awareness that sees the dukkha. Take delight in the awareness that sees the identification. Oh, I see. Okay.
Something that I have been reflecting on, and it also came in your talk, what is the difference between not feeding into and pushing away? Because in this culture of good vibes only, it's easy to spiritually bypass.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Yes, you know, the other side of the window of tolerance, besides getting activated, is what's called hypoarousal, where you're not able to touch what's really here. And so as far as what's pushing away or what's not feeding into, you're the only one that can judge that. But it's a very rich exploration. And if it's because if something is arising and you just see, oh, there's anger, or there's take number 17, John thoughts, or whatever it is, whatever the story is. And sometimes you can see, oh, that's that story. I don't have to go there. That's one of the Buddha's five strategies as well. I don't have to go there. He doesn't say, I don't have to go there. He says, just notice the danger in going down that road. If you can see it before it's a full-blown experience, sometimes, like I said, 90 seconds goes. But if it's lingering, or if you sense it keeps on coming up, then there's something that's calling perhaps for your attention. And you're the only one that knows, and knows, oh, maybe now's not the time to go there because it's too activating, or maybe now is the time to go there because I'm interested and curious and I don't have to take ownership of this. Very rich exploration.
Thank you.
Okay. There's some announcements. Practice leader for the next sitting, the 11 a.m., the 11 o'clock sitting. Anybody who'd be willing who's not being seen during that time? Bernhard, okay. And I'd like if we could end it 5 minutes early, so 11:40 instead of 11:45, because it takes a while for the people in a group to get up there, and it already is a kind of short group. So those people who have a group at 11:45, you have 5 minutes. Please get up there as soon as you can, while being mindful, not rushing. Try that one. It's possible to be mindful and go fast, which is you know, if you're on the food line and there you are just... that's not the time to go slow. You'll feel the vibes of everybody behind you. So there's fast mindfulness and natural and slower mindfulness. Has anybody seen the key to the meditation hall? A few days ago, it was locked, and then we unlocked it, and then it was placed. It was in some location, but we don't know where it is. If you have any idea, please let us know. There's individual and group meetings this morning. And there's a new location. I'm in room 6. That's just off where the T is, the door just to the right of that is room 6. Well, I'll meet a group. There's a new location for Kirsten, which is if you go out, and I think it's slightly to the left, there's a path that goes down just maybe about 20 or 30 steps or so, and Kirsten will be meeting people outside there. And Yuha is in the mysterious attic all the way to the top. Is that clear, anybody? The attic, if you go through, by the bathrooms on the second floor, you'll see a door and just go up the stairs. And for the people who are in tomorrow's group meetings, there's a time change, so just take a look at that. Oh, and one more thing, one more note. Somebody asked to remind people to walk quietly in the long corridor at night, because sometimes there's heel walking makes a loud noise on that floor, and it's hard to sleep. So just be mindful walking around at night. Okay, enjoy your day.